Welcome to the Edu All-Stars Podcast.
Hey guys, and welcome to the 82nd episode of Edu All-Stars. My name is Todd Nesloni, and you can find me on Twitter at TechNinjaTodd.
And my name is Chris Kessler. You can find me on Twitter at IamKessler. Thanks for joining this afternoon.
And we encourage you to tweet out using the hashtag EduAllStars, because we like seeing the conversation and hearing about all the things that stick out to you. We are really excited about this week's guests. We have Paul Carver, who is a middle school teacher in Kansas and works in a very unique learning environment that blends gifted and talented, project-based learning, and makerspace all into one group. So thanks, Paul, for being with us here today.
Well, thank you. I appreciate the invitation, and I look forward to learning from you guys as much as I hope that some of the things that I say will be educational for your viewers.
Awesome. Well, Paul, the kind of spot we always like to start with our guests is just hearing a little bit about your background and your journey in education to where you got now.
Well, cool. My journey started a long time ago. I'm actually like a multi-generational teacher, and so I've always known that I wanted to teach. I can remember writing stories in kindergarten as much as kindergartners ever write, talking about how I wanted to be a PE teacher. And so that never happened, because as I grew up, I realized that PE teaching, while admirable, was not something I was probably going to be very successful at, since, you know, the athletics did not bless me as much as it could have. And so we have really talented people here in our school that did that. So basically, I started out, my background's in elementary education, and so I taught fourth and fifth grade. It was a combined age group, so at any given time in my classroom, half my class was fourth grade and half was fifth grade. I worked with a team teacher where we'd switch out for some of our classes like writing and science and things like that. And then a while back, our gifted teacher at the time actually came to me and said, "Hey, did you hear about that new program they're starting for our school?" And I was like, "No." And she said, "Our superintendent really wants to work with blurring the lines, so to speak, between gifted and high-achieving students, and they want to start this scholars program." And I was like, "Well, that sounds really cool." And so I emailed them, and I was like, "Hey, I'd love to hear more about this." And they said, "It's not really available for general ed teachers." And so I quietly went back to my corner of the building, and a few months later, they actually called me back and said, "We actually have enough student interest that we need a gen ed teacher. Are you still interested?" And so I was hired to work in partnership with that gifted teacher on developing a program. And basically what they sent us out into the field with was the idea that we needed to develop an open curriculum, and we needed to challenge students. And so from there, through many different trials and errors and failures, we have developed a class. It's called Bullpup Scholars Class, and it has evolved into a makerspace. To me, it's more than just a makerspace, if there's anything that's just a makerspace, but I have gifted students, I have regular ed students that are high achieving, and my goal is to develop character ed as well as giving them the opportunity to work in a makerspace.
So what is I'm sure there's not a typical day in that class, but give us some ideas of like some of the projects that would, you know, we would see if you'd walk into the class like that.
Yeah, so basically, one of the challenges that we've had is breaking away from the stereotype, the traditional education. So I've actually developed three different stages that help us do that. So right now, at the beginning of the semester, I have them working in what I call a stage one. And basically what that is I want students to begin the transition from the norm of the teacher giving an assignment, the student fulfilling the requirements of that assignment, and then bringing it back. So my stage one assignments are challenges that I give students, and they work to complete that challenge in a way that is unique to them. So right now we have four challenges out. We have a Hot Wheels challenge where they're building a ramp to do some driving with their Hot Wheels, and I have different requirements for that. And basically they can pick and choose what they want to do on those. There's a fashion challenge. There's inviting a guest speaker to speak for our school with a message. My stage two then is going out to different stations around the room that we bring in some maybe less traditional learning tools like sewing machines, photography, things like that. And then my third stage is actually the pinnacle of the class, where you see more of the really outside-of-the-box thinking projects. So a traditional day, to answer your question, in a stage three or later on in the semester, basically I have students that walk into the room and, like, for example, if I had 10 students walk into the room, two of them might be working on a project where they're taking pictures and editing them for the Humane Society, where they have taken pictures of the animals and are going to donate those pictures back to update the Facebook page for the Humane Society. I might have a student working on developing PVC pipe t-shirt cannons for the basketball game to help the cheerleaders throw them up past the fifth row and the bleachers. I have students who are designing different fashion things for their horses. Since I have a student who's interested in rodeo and developing that industry for herself, all the way to I have a student who's wanting to plan an event where he's going to invite some astrologers to our school and they're going to watch a movie and then do some stargazing. So, you know, a group of 10 students, that's a lot of projects going on at the same time.
So what have you found are some of the biggest challenges that you have in this unique type of classroom?
The biggest challenges that I have, to start out with, is convincing students that it's okay to do things that are not normal. Because I have high-functioning students and I have gifted students, they've really learned to play the game of school, which is great. But I always say that I have to break the bad habits of good students. And so allowing them the opportunity to try something big and to fail without it meaning that they're a failure, that's one of the biggest challenges I have. Otherwise, for a makerspace, finding materials is daunting because you need materials from cardboard to PVC pipe to screws and bolts and wood to old electronics that you can take apart. So basically, I've become like scourer of all of our town looking for all those type of things. I've developed partnerships with people who run our Reuse It Center. So if you have a project in your basement where you fix some room up, but you have a little bit extra lumber or a few extra of this or that, they would donate it to that place. And then they really have a good relationship with us where they will call me up and say, hey, we just got this crazy green machine, and I'm not sure what it is, and it turns out to be a vacuum that takes dental molds and it turns them into the Invisalign thing. And who knew that that was in there, but now we have it, and that was a fun project, by the way, that we actually had happen. So that's another challenge. Otherwise, for me as a teacher personally, it's trying to figure out in a room that has 15 projects going on, how am I going to monitor all of those? How am I going to figure out how to motivate and keep them engaged? How do I develop the idea that what they're doing is going to benefit themselves as well as benefit those around them? And how do I make sure that we're really working toward developing all of their skills, including their character, in one type of project?
What's been one of the most like exciting parts of unlocking this creativity in these students?
For me, really, it's been the development of the student themselves. I don't know if you're into stories or not, but here's a story that's one of my favorites from this semester or from last semester this year. I had a student whose family was not as fortunate as others, but he walked in and he had that spirit that you could just feel that he had something great in store. He wanted to build originally a paintball gun out of PVC pipe, and I was like, yeah, we're a school, probably not going to be a great idea. And so through some talking about things, and one of the major goals of our class is that we develop projects that work to benefit either our lives or the lives of others, we realized that school morale was something that always needs a benefit, right? And so our school does these things called positive behavior rewards, where the whole student body can attend different events that our school hosts, and one of the events was a sporting event, and it was a football game. And so we had talked about, well, what if we took that idea of working with this PVC pipe to make some form of cannon and turn that into something that we benefit that event? So it was really interesting because this student who socially was a little bit awkward and, you know, of course, financially had some struggles, ended up contacting our local police department to find out if it was even legal to build something like that in our school. It was funny because the police officer responded and said, well, it took us about 2 weeks to figure the answer out to this thing because we had to scour the rule book, you know, and figure out what was okay. So we contacted them. He talked to the principal, who forwarded the email to the superintendent, who talked to the school lawyer and figured out that, well, I guess it's not a projectile necessarily. So we got the okay there. So the student's already building a repertoire of how to speak to adults and speak to people in respect positions and develop a proposal that says, this is what I want to do, this is what I'm going to use, and this is why I want to do it. So then it became part of the building process. And at first, he put a really large nozzle for the T-shirt to fit in so he wouldn't have to try to worry about how was it going to fit, and then a really small air tank because he thought it would be easier to compress the air. And so when he first fired it, he went 3, 2, 1, and the T-shirt didn't even come out of the cannon. And so we had to relearn about, well, how do we work this, and do we need to look at things that are already in existence, like maybe a muzzle loader rifle or something like that, where you're loading in the thing that you want to launch back out. So we switched the components around, and we're standing in our school's auditorium after school one day, and he was kind of dejected and kind of ready to give up if this last test didn't work, and he went 3, 2, 1, kerpow, and the T-shirt went shooting off down the aisleway of our auditorium, and it went about 20 rows in, and his eyes were the size of saucers, mine were were the size of saucers, and so then we got our principal and we showed him, and at that point, our principal just went all in, and he's like, whatever you need for this project, go for it. And so finally the day of the event came around, and this kid who had never attend a school event and who really never fit in necessarily to the student body, he came out for his first T-shirt shot, and he's lined up facing the student body. He's on the 30-yard line of the football field, and all the kids are kind of sitting in the bleachers looking at him really in a funny way, and he's like, kerpow, and the T-shirt flew out, and everyone jumped up to their feet, and they were screaming, and the smile on his face was priceless. And for the rest of the game, it was just incredible because by the end of the game, he had about 20 disciples just literally running around the football field with the principal in tow shooting T-shirts. And one of the greatest successes of that was afterward. The next day, the high school cheerleader coach, who is actually a teacher in our building, came down and she said, we would love for you to come to our high school game. The cheerleaders want to invite you here. So I just thought about that one day, that the high school cheerleaders want this junior high kid who is socially learning how to fit in to come to this game in front of hundreds of spectators and shoot T-shirts into the auditorium, into the gym. And what a turnaround, just because the student had a dream and an idea. So this kid who's not really got a lot going for him from the world's perspective, all of a sudden has funding from the school, has a support group behind him that really wants to see him succeed, has all of his peers and all of the people who are traditionally people of respect, they want him to be a part of what they're doing. So that, to me, is one of my greatest victories.
Yeah, that's huge. That's so awesome.
So, Paul, what do you think is one of the most important qualities that a teacher can possess?
That's a really good question. Not because I can't think of one, but because I can think of so many right off the top of my head. One, I think that teachers should always be willing to accept a challenge, whether that's a personal challenge to become better at something or to try something that they're not sure would succeed, or whether that is the willingness to stand up for their true beliefs. In fact, one of the conversations I had as I was developing this class was really in line with that, because we were talking about how do we keep students engaged and how do we keep students really motivated and how do we prove that they're learning things. And what we had to do is we had to boil down what are our core beliefs and what are our things that are non-negotiable. And you know what? giving students A pluses or Bs or whatever was not one of those things that were our core beliefs. So to me, that might even be what my final answer is the development of what you are truly able to think of as your core belief. To me, that might be the quality that really needs to be developed by teachers.
What about those kids that you just don't seem very motivated, and you may not see that in your current classes, but like in classes that you've taught before, the kids that seem to be unmotivated, how do you motivate those kids?
Man, you guys are hitting all the really good questions. So here's another story. I had a young lady who's taken our class for 3 years in a row. The first year, she wanted to do a project on animals. And so she thought that to satisfy the requirement of this high-functioning class and everything, that she needed to do a research paper. And so she started off the first week, and she was, you know, going to lots of websites, and she even, I think, called a few veterinaries in town. And the second week came along, and she started to write her research paper. And about that time is where she lost all sense of motivation and interest in her project. So she gave up on that. And that was a huge thing because we were trying to fight for that. Her second year rolled around, and there was a service dog here in our school, and that particular teacher shares a classroom adjacent to ours. And so this student was able to work with that animal, and she was invited to go to one of our colleges here. And so she went with this psychologist and her dog to the campus and toured the campus and came back, and she's like, well, I thought I wanted to be a vet, but after talking to them, I'm not sure I really do. And so that kind of died in the water. And so year three rolls around, and this particular student decided that she was really interested in photography, but she's never given up on her dream of working with animals. And so that particular student and a few other students agreed that they wanted to talk to the Humane Society, and that's where our Humane Society project happened, where the students went in at 7:30 in the evening and took pictures for 2 hours on these animals, and then they went back to our class and spent the rest of the class period editing those pictures, and then they would donate those pictures back. It was really fascinating because the student who's given up on so many of her projects in our class all of a sudden is working at 7 o'clock at night, doing homework, which was working with this charity. She was doing something that she's never going to get recognized for because her name's not on any of the pictures. Basically the Humane Society opened their doors for the three students to come in after hours for them, and so nobody even saw her going in. But because she was able to work on something that she really loved and found her passion with, the student is super motivated. So to answer your question, one thing for me is that you can never give up on trying to find that student's true motivation, whether that is the love of something or that natural curiosity or the pursuit of doing what's right. The other part of that is you can't give up on yourself. And that's so hard because so many of these projects that students choose are a dream for them, and you and I both know that developing a dream is not something that happens in one day or in one semester. And so, oh my gosh, it's just fighting through those times of wanting to give up because you know deep down in your soul that passion is what is truly important. And so whether that's allowing them to stop a project that seems to be getting them down and start something else, or finding another person, a friend, to help them, an adult, a mentor, something like that. So am I really, really successful at that and have 100% of my kids really engaged? Not yet. But I also know that I'm doing things that are investments, and so I'm not willing to give up on those investments yet.
So, Paul, when you're having a really rough day, what do you do to help recenter yourself?
I do a few things. One is I really actively try to find ways to reaffirm in myself that what I'm doing matters. I look at other students that are being successful or other students that are epitomizing what my core values are, and that's being passionate about their learning and being creative, being curious explorers. I look at that. I find people in my life, whether that is through social media, people who share similar interests with me, or colleagues who, to me, epitomize or embody the values that I want to do and spend a little time with them, because it never fails that they bring you back up. I have a really good friend group. I try to continuously improve myself. So if I'm having a bad day, there's probably a reason for that. And whether that is I feel unsuccessful in something or somebody says something that that gets you down. But I think that, you know, sometimes that deserves some internal reflection, and sometimes that reflection really shows or shines a light on areas that do need strengthened or do need improved.
What about one of the biggest things that you've learned over the last year?
Oh, man, the biggest things that I've learned throughout the year. You know, there's a lot of content that I've learned because we are exploring so many areas. We've talked about 3D printing. We've talked about video game development, the animal thing. I'm not a huge animal person because they're living things, and I already have kids, and I don't want to have to clean up after more things. Working with tools. So, you know, there's all of that that I've really learned. But maybe beyond that, the thing that I've learned the most is that I have to have faith in my students, and I have to trust that what I've given them as an open area to succeed is a valid and is a worthwhile cause. There have been several projects in this class where the students come up to me and said, well, I want to try this out. And in the back of my head, I'm thinking, oh my gosh, are you serious? This is going to be a train wreck. And then a couple weeks later, I'm like their biggest fan going, oh my gosh, what are you going to do next? How can we help you? What can we do? And it's just giving them the opportunity to really step out. That to me has been, it's taken the most effort on my part to learn. Some people are just gifted with that, I guess, as teachers, where they just have that internal belief in their students. But that's something that I've had to let go of as a former elementary student teacher, where you know, you had to have everything planned 3 days in advance and make sure that it's planned to the minute. To hear where it's, I don't know the answer to that question. I don't know how that's going to turn out, but I have the faith in you that even if it does fail, that you're going to bounce back from it and learn something. And I have the faith in our class that the things that are going to happen from this are going to be beneficial not only to you but to the others who are looking at what you're working on.
So, Paul, what do you think is one of the biggest challenges right now in education?
I think that some of the biggest challenges in education right now are giving students opportunities to go beyond the walls of school. I think that right now we're really focused on working on content and becoming really masterful at a lot of little things without ever really providing students the opportunity to delve deep into areas that are truly meaningful to them. You know, a lot of times we complain about how students lack creativity or lack responsibility, things like that. And I can see where those complaints come from because I've said similar things to that. But what I believe deep down is that we have trained them not to. And I vehemently disagree with the statement that our students lack creativity, because if you open YouTube ever, then you will see young people who are developing things that are outstanding. I was trying to learn some Photoshop things, and one of the YouTube videos I pulled up to as a tutorial, the kid sounded like he was an 8-year-old, and I'm like, okay, pause, go back. What did you just say?
I think I've seen that same kid, because I always find young kids in Photoshop tutorials so funny.
And they're some of the best, and they yeah. explain it step by step, and you're like, oh, yes, this is great. I mean, oh my gosh, that to me is where we need to be, is to say, you know what, we need to learn X content. How we get there can be the choice of the student, because we know that they're going to find the way that works for them. Mm-hmm. Kids don't like feeling dumb, and kids don't like feeling ineffective. And so I think that our job as educators maybe needs to shift from coming up with a song and dance and allowing the student to come up with ways to really bring their learning to them in meaningful ways that they have created.
If you could go back and just kind of be in your first year classroom, what kind of advice would you give yourself as a first year teacher?
Oh man, I don't know. My first year, it was just bliss because I didn't know what I didn't know. And so I don't know, how do you advise somebody who's just there like, I'm going to change it all? I think that for me, what I would actually say to myself is be an active seeker of people maybe outside of the building who have similar thoughts, similar beliefs that can help you. Use the people in your building as mentors because they know the climate of the school and they know the community and they know the students that you have. But also find people who are doing things that you dream of doing. To me, that's been something that has only recently happened with me, finding some social media like Twitter, developing some professional learning communities online, because it's something that isn't really done a lot in our area, or is only beginning to develop. And so finding people who've done it for a little longer than me, or finding people who are developing it in a way that's similar to the way I'm developing it, that to me has been one of the most beneficial things. So that would be a piece of advice I'd give myself. Seek others who can assist or encourage or echo the things that you're trying to do.
Well, Paul, one of the questions that we always like to end on when we interview our guests is, what is something that you're really passionate about right now?
For me, it is something that I'm trying to get this concept away from the idea that it can only happen in an after-school program or in a library space that's not really a valid thing in a classroom situation. So I've been developing curriculum to support this, that it is something that you can really implement inside your own classroom, whether that's from the elementary level to the high school level or beyond. I believe that students need the ability or need the space to make. It's makerspace, right? So we need to be providing that to them and knowing that it's going to benefit them. It might not show up on a standardized test, but it's going to show up when that 93-pound blonde-haired girl in her cute outfit comes in with the handsaw and the power drill and builds an Adirondack chair in your classroom. And she says afterwards that, hey, you know what, I never even thought about trying to go into carpentry class at high school, but now this is what I want to do with my life. To me, that's where it's at. That's what I'm passionate about, is developing this type of concept so that we can provide students with an opportunity that they never dreamed would be something they could do at a school situation.
Yeah. Paul, thanks so much, man, for taking some time with us tonight. And I just want to ask, how can listeners connect with you, like on Twitter and your blog?
Twitter's great. I'm at MRPS Carver, Mr. P.S. Carver. That'd be the easiest way. Really that, if your listeners are interested in seeing some of the projects and concepts that are happening, we have a Facebook page for our class. It's on Facebook, Bullpup Scholars Class, and they can search for that to see some of the things that are happening here. So I appreciate being on here. It's been a lot of fun. Hopefully the things that we've talked about strike a chord with somebody and they can develop some things for their own students.
Yeah, absolutely. And if you guys want to connect with us, you can find us on Twitter at EduAllStarsHQ. You can find our website at EduAllStars.com. And also, you can search out EduAllStars with no spaces on iTunes.
And you can join us for our next episode as we interview the National Teacher of the Year for 2014, Sean McComb. So thanks again, Paul, for coming on with us. We really appreciate you giving us some of your time.
All right. Thank you.
Thanks, Paul.